Shame.
Shouting into the wind over the glorious, triumphant Ode to Joy of Ludwig von Beethoven. Welcome to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here again today for another exciting hour in Catholic radio, where we talk about life, the universe, and everything from a Catholic perspective. And today, being Wednesday, we are we will have Mr. Rod Bennett on the show in a little bit. We're doing battle with Skype to make it possible for him to get on the air. Skype is doing its best to make sure that he can't get on the air, but we will overcome through the help of God. In the meantime, I wanted to talk a little bit. Didn't really get a chance to address this yesterday, but it's just something that has been coming up. I have been, it's no secret that I have been critical of pro-life movement establishment leadership during this election year. And I don't regret that, and I continue to not regret it, because I think that the pro-life movement establishment leadership is destroying the pro-life movement. And I don't want the pro-life movement to be destroyed. I want it to flourish. I want it to go from strength to strength and glory to glory. I want it to be massively successful. I want the witness of the church to be an astonishment to the world and confounding to the world. You don't do that by defending a sex predator. That's not how that's done. And we are seeing that, you know, for years and years, it was the charge of feminists. For the last 30 years, it's been the charge of feminists that, the pro-life movement is hostile to women, and et cetera, et cetera. And that charge has gone down in flames many, many times, because the reality was, of course, the pro-life movement wants women's happiness. They want their eternal happiness, and they want their temporal happiness as well. And so there have been all kinds of pro-life initiatives and crisis pregnancy centers and, you know, really heroic work done by pro-life people, saving not merely unborn children, but helping their mothers get a foothold on life and trying to be there for them and support them. And all that is, you know, bravo. Let's have more of that. But over time, the pro-life movement as well has allowed itself to become shackled to one political party that increasingly has made clear that it really does hold women in contempt. I'm one of those people that 20 years ago totally took seriously the argument that character matters, that Bill Clinton's abuse, and I think rape, of women. I'm one of the people that takes Juanita Broderick seriously, just as I took the accusers of Bill Cosby seriously, and the other women that have charged him with sexual assault as well. I believed everything that the pro-life leaders and Christian leaders told me when they said that character matters, that Bill Clinton's abuse of women was anti-woman. And so forth. I believed that 20 years ago, and I still believe it. But what's been made clear over this past weekend, as I've listened to the shameful, absolutely shameful defenses of Donald Trump from Christian pro-life leaders, is that what was said 20 years ago by many of the people who are still running the show today in terms of the pro-life movement, is that they didn't believe that. And that, in fact, the problem is not sexual assault. It's sexual assault by Democrats. When a Republican does it, it's okay. And we have heard people say things like, well, it was just a joke. Or more appalling for me as a man, it's just absolutely humiliating to hear people say, well, this is the way all men talk. No, this is not the way all men talk. This is not the way most men talk. This is not the way I've ever heard any male in a locker room talk. We do not, women, please be clear about this. We do not, in our private conversations, spend our time bragging about sexual assault. We don't do that. And if you think that we do as a Christian, you've just told us something very important about yourself. And if you're a male saying that, my advice to every woman in the room is to put a mile of distance between you and any man who says this is the normal way that men talk. It's not. And, you know, you've got people like Sean Hannity saying, well, King David had 500 concubines. Like, that's a defense. So this has been. Okay, great. Rod, how you doing?
I'm here.
Good.
Sorry about the technical difficulties. Don't know what the holdup is, but.
That's okay. Those things happen. The gremlins are out in force sometimes. I've just been remarking on the embarrassing spectacle of watching Christian pro-life leaders making excuses for and defending the indefensible bragging about sexual assault from our Republican candidate. And there is no defense for it. So saying things like, well, Bill Clinton did it too.
That means they're both a couple of swine.
Well, right. But here's the thing, you know, what Jesus says is those to whom much is given, much will be required. The servant who does not know his master's will and does not do it will be beaten with few blows, he says. The servant who knows his master's will and does not do it will be beaten with many blows. If you're going to hold yourself out as a Christian, then guess what? Don't whine about being held to a higher standard.
Answer me this. Was the argument, or was it not, back during the Clinton years, that a man who does these kind of things is unworthy to sit in Washington's seat?
Was that
the argument?
It absolutely was.
So to say and suddenly that Bill Clinton did it is a defense of the guy that you now want to put in Washington's seat, there's some incongruity there.
No kidding. And this is the appalling thing for me. I've been warning for a year. Over and over and over, I've heard from people saying if Hillary gets to be president, then there will be persecution of Christians. By the way, I don't really buy that, especially. Persecution of Christians. What do you mean by persecution?
If all of those kind of things that they said about Obama had come true by now, that we've had 8 years for all of that stuff to come true. And yes, there have been a couple of failed attacks. Obama is no friend of Christian or religious liberty as it's been traditionally understood. I mean, there's the famous unanimous decision against him by the Supreme Court.
Yep, but, I totally agree.
But all of that's fear-mongering. You know, I mean, that's typical for an American election. If you put this man in, it's the end of civilization. So
that's an old story. We've heard over and over again that, you know, John Zmirak wrote a piece recently for stream.org in which I'm not making this up. He actually compared Hillary to Diocletian and Trump to Constantine. And it's like, give thou me a break.
Well, the fact that they're both being compared to pagans is maybe the only thing I can see that.
Well, let's grant for a second that Hillary is Diocletian. I don't believe that for one second. But let's grant for a moment that she's Diocletian. Jesus says to his disciples, do not fear him who can kill the body. Fear him who can destroy both body and soul in hell. And what we have seen in the past weekend has been the just grotesque spectacle of pro-life Christians doing more to destroy the witness of the church and the pro-life movement in 5 days than 10 million feminists for 30 years have been able to achieve.
Right.
And how have they done it? By saying, yes, as a matter of fact, we do think sex predators are just fine. Not a problem. What are they doing? Are
it's quite a spectacle.
It's just appalling.
I haven't wrapped my head around yet what this is doing to the future of Christianity in the country. But I have a feeling that it's pretty profound.
Yeah, I do too. I think that this past week was a real watershed. I mean, the pro-life movement has been disgracing itself for a long time with this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But this weekend was a tipping point, I think, for a lot of people. And, of course, that gravely concerns me because in the grand scheme of things, you know, I'm getting lots of emails and letters from people who are despairing, you know, converts who are asking, was it a mistake for me to convert and this kind of thing? And those are the people I want to address when we get back.
Absolutely.
You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Rod Bennett, and we'll be back right after this.
If you enjoy listening to Mark Shea and all of his wonderful co-hosts here on Connecting the Dots, then consider becoming a friend of the show and provide your support today. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show. Thank you.
Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Mr. Rod Bennett, and we are still struggling to get him on via Skype, but that's okay. He's here on the phone, and we're talking about the absolute folly of taking a movement whose entire existence depends on the power of moral suasion, which is what the pro-life movement does. That's what we have going for us. It's the only thing we have going for us. We don't have political clout. We never have, and we never will. We are not going to be overturning Roe v. Wade. That's not going to happen. You know why it's not going to happen? Because 80% of the American people don't want it to happen.
Right.
That's a fact.
Right.
And so what we have going for us is the power of moral suasion. We have going for us the ability to look at people who argue for tearing children limb from limb, for stabbing them in the brain with babies, and saying that's a bad thing.
Yep. As the monk said in the arena, for God's sake, forbear. And that's what got the gladiatorial games in Rome abolished.
Yes.
And, that absolutely is. I mean, if we passed a law today outlawing all abortion, how long would it stand? How long would the Republic stand?
It's not going to happen.
It's like prohibition, only worse. You would immediately have the worst kind of civil tumult and unrest.
Right.
And people say, well, bring it on. You know, we've got millions of babies. It's a Holocaust and stuff, which is a situation very, very peculiarly analogous to the situation President Lincoln was in when he was elected. In other words, he was against slavery. He didn't deny that slavery was an enormous evil and that it needed to be overturned. But what he kept asking over and over again was it necessary to destroy the American Republic in order? Was it so great an evil that it couldn't wait to be overturned without destroying America.
Right.
In other words, was the imperative so great that the Union had to fail in order to bring it about now rather than later? It's an open question, well worth discussing. But that was Mr. Lincoln's paradox. And I think we have the same thing. In other words, yes, even if you tried to, overturn Roe now, the results would be so catastrophic and would also, in this case, fail to achieve the goal. At least,
and,
you know, I mean, suppose you might create some
entirely,
new country.
It's an entirely moot point as well, because you've got two candidates who both support abortion. And,
well, that's it. That even I'm assuming that, for the sake of argument, that you might take Trump's pledges somehow seriously, but
But of course,
but no, you've you. That's what you're saying. I'm trying to underline what you were saying a moment ago, that if we don't want to simply get it on, destroy the country, you know, just go ahead and have this thing out in 1861 terms. Then the only alternative to it is to persuade people.
Right.
You know, but you either in this world of ours, when you have a disagreement, those are the only two things that can happen. You compromise long enough to see whether you can't persuade the other person before you have to shoot him, you know.
Yeah. And so when you hear Christians saying, well, what if we're persecuted? We have to do anything to avoid persecution. My reply is, no, you don't. Actually, you really don't have to do anything to avoid persecution. And you especially must never sin in order to avoid persecution.
Absolutely.
Now, you could, if you're like blind and deaf and have been living in a cave for the past year, you could somehow pretend to yourself that all that's going on when you're voting for Trump is all you want to do is you just want to change the Supreme Court on the fantasy that he cares about abortion. Now, here's reality, of course. Reality is that he has not spoken publicly about abortion since April, when he said that the laws are set and I think we need to just leave them that way. That's the last time he addressed it publicly. He refused to address it in his convention speech. At the debate, I was really pleased with myself because of the debate. Hillary, of course, who has to play to her base, said that if Trump is elected, Roe versus Wade is in grave danger, et cetera, et cetera. Why does she say that? She says that because she has to play to her base and gin them up with terrors of what's going to happen if Trump is elected. But after she gave that little homily on behalf of Roe versus Wade, I was live blogging this. I said, you watch. I will bet you $5 that when Trump responds, he doesn't touch Roe versus Wade and goes straight to talking about protecting the Second Amendment. And that is exactly what he did. Why?
Right.
Because
well,
he does not care.
With a little detour to mention ISIS and beheadings, but no mention no mention of abortion.
Not a mention of Roe v. Wade, because he does not care about abortion. So you've got then a pro-life movement that has totally and completely lied itself into believing that this guy cares about abortion. And then what does it do? This is the incredible thing. This movement that is entirely based on moral suasion then blows like a drunken sailor for the last 5 days, all of its moral capital and credibility, saying things like, well, this is just the way that guys talk. This is locker room talk. You know, David had 500 concubines. That was actually something that Sean Hannity said. Father Frank Bavone is out there saying, yes, absolutely, you have to vote for Trump. He is a penitent sinner. It's good news to discover that we're going to be able to empty our prisons of sex predators. All we got to do is just go to the prisons and say, you know, you just need to go online and say, sorry, and you are free as a bird. Not a problem anymore. In fact, here, we'll give you high office as a reward for your true penitence. This is the now the face of the pro-life movement. And it has been the face of the pro-life movement, of course, throughout Trump's campaign. Every time.
Also, if you'll remember, Bill Clinton went on television with an apology that was fully the equal of Mr. Trump's in sincerity.
Absolutely it was. Absolutely it was.
We haven't listened very closely. We haven't forgiven him over the last 20 years.
Exactly right. And this is the thing. This is the appalling double standard of the pro-life movement. The pro-life movement has been telling me, if you don't completely accept with full faith and credit Trump's ridiculous fake apology, then you are a merciless Pharisee. And, you know, the judgment that you use will be measured to you and so on and so forth. While at the same time telling us that we must remember everything that Bill Clinton ever did. And cling to it like...
And smear his wife with him, even though she's wasn't involved.
Right, yeah. Well, and that's the other incredible thing, you know, is the argument that a woman who has been faithful to her marriage vows in the face of betrayal is the moral equal of an adulterous sex predator. That's the argument. Now, I'm willing to say, you know, look, I grant that she went out there and attacked Clinton's accusers and did all that. And that's absolutely true.
Not all of them.
But
go ahead.
But enough of them, you know. And yeah, she was dead wrong for that. But then again, I'm under no obligation at all to say, to support or make excuses for a single evil Hillary Clinton says or does.
Right.
I'm happy to say, yeah, she was dead wrong to attack those women. But you know what? The Trump defender is showing once again Shay's iron law of pro-life support for Trump, which is that I don't have to support or defend anything that Hillary says or does that's evil. But the Trump defender is showing that he has to defend and is defending everything that Trump says.
Yeah, we're still looking for the bottom.
Yeah, we're still looking for the bottom. And we're saying, you know, well, this is boys will be boys. And, you know, and all of this stuff, instead of saying there's no excuse for this. And in the course of it, we have, in the last 5 days, we have watched the pro-life leadership establishment absolutely dynamite the credibility of the pro-life movement and of American Christianity. And so I'm hearing from people who are close to despair. I'm hearing from converts who are wondering if they made the right decision becoming Catholic. I'm hearing from people who are doubting the credibility of the gospel. I see people of color, and especially women of color, who are just struggling to hold on to their faith. And I want to speak to them when we return. You're listening to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shay. We're here today with Rod Bennett. And we'll be back right after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
The Dot. I'm your host, Mark Shay, and we are back with Rod Bennett. We've been talking about the humiliating spectacle of defenses of sex predators for Jesus. It's just appalling. And I was mentioning before the break, and by the way, if you're out there and you want to join this conversation, give us a call. We're at 1-573-4-BREAD-4, 1-573-4-BREAD-4. But I got an email from a woman who's just, I mean, she's not the only one. She's a woman of color, devout Christian, lifelong defender of the unborn, opposes abortion, and so on and so forth. But because she dared to say that she's scandalized by the Christian rights support for a guy who spends his time retweeting white supremacists and neo-Nazi crap, and bragging about grabbing women's genitals, she's all of a sudden getting accused of being a fake Christian and secretly pro-abortion and all of this. And so she wrote, she said, "I can't do it anymore. I can't watch other Christians be so ugly because of the election. I am embarrassed and ashamed. There is literally nothing they won't excuse if it means a win. If their Lord and Savior, not Jesus Christ, shot me in front of them, they'd cheer." You know, we're seeing links. I saw a link the other day from some, neo-Nazi guy going, "Every neo-Nazi I know is supporting Trump in this election, is out there looking for him," right? And for some reason, this lovely woman who happens to be black is scandalized by this, if you can believe it, And so she says, "How do I go to church after reading posts by Christians who talk like this? It's so repulsive." And she's really struggling. She's not the only one. I'm seeing this from a number of people. And so I wrote her back, and I just wanted to read what I wrote her because it kind of summarizes how I think we as Christians who are serious about the faith have to look at this as we watch. We don't have, as Catholics especially, we don't have the luxury of saying, those guys aren't real Christians.
No.
Yeah, they are. They're real Christians, Mm-hmm. They're bad ones, but they're real ones. And so I wrote her back. I said, "We're living in a time of what ancient Christians called white martyrdom, as distinct from the messier red martyrdom involving blood. White martyrdom means putting up with the anguish of this kind of crap. It's real suffering and something Jesus had to endure as he watched his disciples chicken out, deny him, fight for the top of the heap of worldly power. Your sufferings are not meaningless. They are a real share in the cross, and we can offer them for the healing and redemption of the church. It will not last forever, and a day will come when he purifies his bride and she shines again. Meanwhile, take a break and love that adorable daughter of yours. She's the future, not Trump. As to the scandal of Christians making defenses of racism and sexual assault, remember that the Holy Spirit is the soul of the church and not any of us jackasses. It's not that there are some sinners in the church. It's that there are nothing but sinners there. There's also nothing but sinners everywhere else. So there is no escape from it by bugging out. Instead, we face up to the fact that there really was a reason our redemption required that sacrifice and not simply a slap on the wrist. Will Smith recently remarked that racism isn't increasing, it's just getting filmed now. In the same way, sin is not increasing, it's just getting exposed. It was that disgusting thing our Lord died and rose to destroy. That's why he picked a shuffler, a coward, and a snob like Peter upon which to found his church. We are all like that, every one of us. So the paradox is you must not despair. If he can save men who knew who he was and still left him to be flogged and crucified instead of doing the right thing, he can save all those horrible people you are seeing online and at church, and he can save you when you do something that you can't forgive yourself for. Whereto serves mercy but to confront the visage of offense? Have mercy on them. They know not what they do.
Hmm. Not bad, Mark. You're pretty good at that.
Well, thanks. It needs to be said, because I'm as scandalized as she is.
Yeah. It's an appalling spectacle. It's no question about it. Make your bottom fall out from under you.
Yeah, yeah. And so I my heart just goes out to people.
Absolutely, yeah.
Who are struggling with their faith because of this. And I beg them, to remember that it's Christ who constitutes the church and makes it holy. It is not us. I'm grateful every day for the fact that Jesus put a coward as his first pope and said, yeah, you know, and then here's Satan. I mean, that's what he calls him at one point, right? Upon this rock, I will build my church.
Right.
And 2 minutes later, he's saying, Satan, get behind me, you know?
Right.
That's what we're made of. You know, Paul's not kidding when he says it's treasures in jars of clay. We are such pathetically weak creatures.
Right.
And when we're afraid, we will do awful things, but that doesn't falsify the gospel.
Yeah, the phrase "be not afraid" comes to mind. It was the motto of Pope John Paul's pontificate, and needs to be said, I think, more than ever now, because that ultimately is what's behind all of this.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I don't make really genuine parallels between Trump and Adolf Hitler, because I think it's just simply on the principle of the boy that cried wolf, I don't do it.
Right.
But also I think there's a disproportion there that makes it silly. But I will say this.
Right.
All Christians need to meditate on what happened to German Christendom in the 1930s.
Right.
German Christendom, and this is Protestant, Catholic, every denomination in Germany, at least three-fifths of them over the course of that decade moved to active support for National Socialism.
Right.
In other words, it was a Christian, a movement that had enormous Christian backing, and that Christians brought themselves to reconcile themselves with as time went on. And that's people like us.
The word is prostituted themselves. Why did they do it?
They did it out of nothing else but terror and hatred of the left.
Right.
Modern histories don't emphasize enough the fact that Adolf Hitler, more than anything else, was an anti-communist. That was the cornerstone of his movement. Even the Jew hate and the Holocaust was, he hated the Jews mainly because so many of them were leftists. And a lot of the other stuff, the scientific theories and the rest of it, was rationalism. You know, Karl Marx was a Jew and all the rest of it. He had all of his rationalizations. But even the Jews he hated mainly for terror of the left. And that's the exact thing that's stampeding Christians into the arms of this much less talented buffoon, also with authoritarian, a pretty authoritarian streak in him. But because of terror and fear and hatred, personal hatred for enemies on the left, anger and malice and hatred for people who had tried to turn Germany towards the left in the 1920s and 30s, bitterness about that is what drove ordinary, rational Baptists and Presbyterians and Lutherans and people like that and Roman Catholics into the arms of Nazism over that decade. They started trying to be more moderate. They really did. Hitler was not their first choice. That's absolutely the truth.
Yep.
They tried to begin with much more ordinary conservatives. But the ordinary conservatives saw whose stock was on the rise, and they made a reluctant pact with the devil, and then the devil took over.
Right. Well, and they said, and I'm hearing the same thing said about Trump, you know, well, we'll vote him in, but then we can control him.
The more you know about Germany in the 20s and early 30s, the more that kind of thing rings hollow.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, all I want is a nuclear arsenal, and then, you know.
Well, again, not to be alarmist, but please, our listeners, please do not go away and say that Rod says Trump is Hitler. That's not the point. But there is something terribly important to learn in the history of a group of Christians who slowly acclimatize themselves, like the frogs that are slowly boiling to death, to fascists in their movement. People making common cause with really despicable people. And it's something you've got to watch, no matter how much you hate Hillary Clinton. Okay?
Right.
And I think that hatred itself has large elements of un-Christianity in it. I mean, we're very
Absolutely
much warned against malice, and you know, we're supposed to be kind-hearted towards everybody. But specifically, at one point, for Caesar, we're told to be careful towards and all the rest of it.
Up against a break, Rod, but we'll be back right after this. You're listening to Connecting the Dots with Rod Bennett, and we'll be back right after this.
If you enjoy listening to Mark Shea and all of his wonderful co-hosts here on Connecting the Dots, then consider becoming a friend of the show and provide your support today. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show. Thank you.
Welcome back to Connecting the Dots. I'm your host, Mark Shea, and we are here today with Mr. Rod Bennett. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 1-573-4-BREAD-4, 1-573-4-BREAD-4. We've been talking over the past hour about just the embarrassing spectacle of making excuses for a sex predator. And, you know, Shea's iron law of pro-life Trump support states that Trump will, like some kind of spiritual vampire, will suck the pro-life supporter dry of all credibility and will, in return, give him loss, ignominy, shame, defeat, and the destruction of his witness. That's what you'll get in return from Trump. He is not going to do one damn thing to help the pro-life movement. He has not done one damn thing to help the pro-life movement. Every single move that he's made, including, you know, supporting his, getting his panel of, you know, advisors from Christian pro-life establishment types, hasn't resulted in him making any policy statement or speech condemning abortion. What it's resulted in is all of those people that he's surrounding him with fanning out and saying, vote Trump or the baby gets it. And if you don't vote Trump, you're going to hell, or you're a bad Christian, or you're a terrible American, or whatever. That's how it works. Everything is for Trump, and nothing is for the actual pro-life movement. Nothing is for the unborn.
Well, that's been one thing that I've noticed, is that the math in all of this doesn't add up. The you're told, well, for one thing, a lot of people, they try to make a rational statement by saying, I'm going to hold my nose and vote for Trump in hopes of the Supreme Court, et cetera, et cetera. But that's fine. I understand. Hold your nose voting is an old tradition in America. I understand this, okay? I understand the idea. The problem is, all those people who tell me that they're holding their nose, they never really do it. They hold their nose for about 2 minutes and then quickly move into actual shilling for Trump.
Yes, that's it.
They don't hold their nose.
Right.
They claim to be doing it, but immediately begin excusing all of his crimes and outrages, and thinking up all kinds of outrageous explanations for all of it. And so they're not holding their nose. You know, that would be great if they were. That's a step up in sincerity. But that's not really the way it works.
They're urging,
not that I've seen anyway.
Right. What they're really doing is urging us, the rest of us, to develop a taste for the scent of manure.
Right. And in the last segment, we talked about how I think that it's fear that's motivating it all. And I really think that's the explanation. I think a lot of these paranoid fantasies about Hillary Clinton are haunting a lot of people. But other people are just, I wonder too whether anger, you know. I mean, after all, in a way, if Trump's just as bad a sexual swine as Bill Clinton, in a way, they get the last laugh. The Democrats get the last laugh. And I wonder how much of this is the pride of just simply refusing them the last laugh, you know. In other words, if we end up promoting a man who's fully his Bill Clinton's equal, then there's a certain perverse humor in that, you know, that character doesn't count after all, apparently.
Yeah. That's a weird quirk of human psychology. I suppose it's out there as well.
One of those slogans that I forget, one particular commentator tweeted that if you're defending a sexual predator because his agenda is so important, then you are Hillary Clinton.
Yes.
I mean, that's essentially what happened in the 90s. I had lots of liberal friends in the 90s who said, well, he may be a sleaze, but he's our sleaze, you know.
Yep.
We have to defend him because what are we going to do, vote for the Republican?
Yeah.
We're going to hand the Republican the victory, you know. And you'll hear this now. And it's essentially what the Trumpkins are saying. They're saying, if you can't vote for the man, vote for the platform. And that's exactly what the Democrats said during the Clinton debacle.
Yep.
In other words, we've done is switch sides, and there is a hilarious or horribly ironic last laugh quality for all of this, that Hillary Clinton herself becomes president. You know, it comes down to an election between the first woman ever nominated and the first certified woman hater ever nominated.
Yeah.
It could hardly be more stark, you know.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
So I wonder to what degree the long shadow of the 1990s is hanging over all of this. Just a simple, childish refusal to let this horrible scenario make such fools out of the Republicans, you know.
Well, and again, I think, you know, so much of it seems to me to come back to pride. How can this be happening? There's a priest online who was remarking that, you know, if I vote for Trump, I don't like Trump, but if I vote for Trump, I know that I'll be getting, and I found these words just absolutely ominous. If I vote for Trump, I'll be getting the best Christians. And I thought, there's your trouble right there, buddy.
Wow.
What convinces you at this late hour that you are the best Christians?
Right.
And that's the incredible thing over and over. You know, I keep hearing people saying, you don't have to agree with the church on prudential judgments. And my question, especially at this late hour, is why in hell should I think that you are capable of prudence?
Or telling a prudent judgment telling from a bad one.
From a hole in the ground. Why on earth would I think that someone who is still, I mean, even the GOP is leaving this guy. but the most prudent Christians in the world, the people who are smarter than the Pope, are telling me that you have to vote for this guy. You need to support this sex predator. Because, you know, don't vote for him, vote for the platform, like he cares about the platform. And that's the incredible thing to me, is watching this spectacle of the best Christians telling me I got to support a rapist. I really don't think I need to do that. And you know, win or lose, and he's gonna lose, by the way. You know, it's all over with the shouting, practically.
Well, I agree with you, except that in this bananas election cycle, I think there may be six or eight more October surprises ahead of us, you know, with Assange floating around out there and all of these other things. We may have more October surprises than we can shake a stick at.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. But
I would like to say one thing before we run out of time, and that is that I don't think the and I prophesied at the time that the revelations about the sex predator angle on Trump wouldn't make much of a difference for most people, and I still think that they haven't. I think most people made their minds up a long time ago, and they've just set their face like a flint a long time ago.
Well, I don't.
But
yeah,
I will say that
sure
even for me, they weren't decisive. In other words, people will say, well, what are you going to do? You know, he's got this habit like Bill Clinton had. But still, the disproportion, the continuing slaughter of abortion and all the rest of it between this man's sexual peccadilloes, you know. I will say this, that the reason that I have not supported Trump from the beginning, from day one, is that the man is a crypto-fascist. He applauded the Tiananmen Square massacre. He's championed Vladimir Putin for the last 2 years. He's applauded all sorts of horrible dictatorial people. I mean, he finds things to like about every tin pot dictator out there. And so I think the man has an authoritarian streak that's pretty wide. And he's certainly not in the tradition of an American leader. So if you can't bring yourself to get worked up over locker room talk, quote unquote, not that I accept that argument. The number one reason not to fool around with Donald Trump is that he's no friend of Christians, because no fascist, no authoritarian leader is a friend of Christians or any other religion.
Exactly right. That's very true. Well, it's interesting that it took this to like cause a tipping point, which I think that there's something very curious about that I haven't been able to figure out exactly, but it does have something to do with keep your hands off women. But yeah, I mean, if you didn't know that this guy was a swine before this, then you just weren't paying attention.
And if you're still voting for him after this, then you don't care that he's a swine. And it's best your spiritual health to go and admit that to yourself.
Yep. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today, Rod. You've been listening to Connecting the Dots. Our producers today were Jen the Jawa Longworth and Danny Head. And we will be back tomorrow. See you then. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.